I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Sorry I've been a bit away. I've missed you. And I miss doing these podcasts. It's been a while, so it's very nice to be back doing them again.
It's been like a month since we recorded anything.
Yeah, and so, and my profound apologies, but I've been touring the country, literally.
I'm going to tell the listeners where you've been. Can you even remember?
Can I even remember? Oh, it's a tour started in the Watermill Theatre in Newbury, back at the beginning of October, and since then, goodness me, we've done all manner of places. Liverpool, Manchester, Chester, Canterbury, Southampton, Bath, Richmond, Exeter, Torquay, Guildford. We've done 21 venues, and we've done more than, we've done almost 40 performances. And the thing that really makes David and I laugh the most is checking into the hotels. We've been in endless hotels. And the first thing they ask you when you check into a hotel now is not, have you had a good trip or anything like that? Say, what time do you want breakfast? Because they've got COVID regulations, so how many people can attend breakfast at once? Of course, it's completely potty. So we say, my favourite one was, we said, 9:30, please. And they said, can't have that. You can have 7:15.
Why did they ask you then?
So I go down there at 9:30, thinking I'm going to get my breakfast half past. So the place is masses of room. It's amazing. We keep being asked, what time do you want breakfast? We then started asking, what time can we have breakfast?
Probably simpler.
Some of it's been hysterical. We did Derby and Nottingham one weekend. We drove up to Derby. Did two shows, and then we went to Nottingham to check into the hotel.
Oh, I remember this story.
Yeah, it's very...
No, the listeners don't know.
It was very cold, Geoffrey, in the hotel.
Geoffrey runs cold, so it's I not... Do. He likes everything to be warm around him.
I do. And David and I were in rooms one above the other and discovered that the heating system in our rooms wasn't working, and it was a fault somewhere. So... In the end, we both had to get...
It was 1 a.m.
Well, yeah, 2 a.m.
And then why don't you tell them about the saddest sandwich?
Oh, I made a mistake in one hotel.
I thought that was the same night.
Oh, no, it was a different night.
Wasn't it? I thought you were very cold and you wanted food and they delivered you the world's saddest sandwich.
Oh, that's right. It was the same hotel.
It was.
Anyway, I'm not going to name the hotel.
No, but it was the saddest sandwich.
I ordered. There's a room service menus, which I'm looking at. And it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I said, can I have this, please? I'd like a cheese and pickle sandwich. I can honestly say it's the saddest sandwich I've ever seen. A, it was that a sliced processed cheese.
Yeah.
A slice of that, which you peel off one of those. And it was then in between two, well, I suppose they were white bread slices.
Yeah.
There was, what pickle there was in a separate pot. And there were three chips or four. And this was it. You know, it was £8 worth. You know, and you think...
No thanks.
Really? I mean, oh dear. If that's glamour, I'm a Chinaman.
I don't think anyone said it was going to be glamorous.
But we've had some very, very good audiences. Very fine and very enthusiastic and good reviews. And, you know, so what's not to like? But it's been a bit of a trek. 2 months on the road. Which is why I have not been podcasting as I wanted to be.
Yeah, but you're back now.
I'm back now, back in the saddle, and looking forward to it very much. And I hope you've all kept going through these sometimes chilly days.
And windy.
Windy, yes.
I feel very sorry for those people who are on the 8th day of no power.
Yeah, so do I. Something went severely wrong.
Well, it knocked out, it like pulled poles out of the ground fully. It's not, you'd have to like, you actually have to replace the
yes.
pole.
Yeah.
It's not just like rewiring something,
no.
Reconnecting something.
And there weren't enough people thrown at it, obviously. That's what, it took them quite a long time to send the army to help, which was they should have done. Mm. But I do feel sorry for them. Storm Avern or Awern. Was it?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I know we were playing when it was... One of the things about some theatres is that because they have to have a door so to get the scenery in, the so-called dock, dock, the wind comes whistling through it. And if you're standing in the wings, as I am, for about 30 minutes in the second half, I have to walk about just to keep warm.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
I need your coat back there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was my party. You were in Guildford that night.
That's right, we were. I thought, I got back here about 11:45, 10 to 12. I didn't think it was any point driving to Hackney.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the party was definitely still going, but it was starting to, like, branch out of control at that stage.
Yes, I thought that my appearance would probably not be conducive.
Oh, it would have been. Everyone would have. You would have had a king's welcome.
But
I mean, you'd have a king's welcome anyway, but by that point, you really would have had a king's welcome.
Anyway, Diana enjoyed it very much.
Mm.
And so did you, didn't you, darling?
Yeah, it was great. I can't remember as much of it as I would like. But
well, that's a sign of a good party.
Yeah. And my house. I somehow managed to invite everyone back to my house. That part was also...
Yes, I sort of instinctively guessed that might happen.
Yeah. So my house... It didn't look that great the next day.
I bet it didn't. Absolutely not. Crikey. That's,
But yeah, no, it was good fun.
Good. Well, it's good to have a good party.
Yeah, everyone needed a party. No one's had a party for a while. And the way things are going, I should imagine, we shouldn't be having many more parties. So.
Well,
who knows?
We don't really know. I think providing you're sensible. A lot of us have been, I've been treble jabbed.
You had your booster ages ago.
Yeah, September.
Hmm.
But I had, tell you what I did have this week, I had a pneumonia vaccination.
Wow, I didn't know you could get those.
Yeah.
That's good.
They last for 5 to 10 years. I had one on Wednesday.
Oh, that's smart. I should tell Mum to get one of those.
Yeah, I think there are 23 strains of pneumonia going around at the moment.
Interesting.
And the new COVID, the so-called Omicron, at the moment, we're not seeing vast hospitalisations. Most of the people who are getting it are getting fairly mild symptoms.
Yeah, no, I heard that. Do you just get that from your GP? Did they message you?
Yeah, they messaged me. Messaged me when I was at the beginning of November, and I said I can't do it until the first week of December. So I went on Wednesday, 1st of December.
You've got such a good GP surgery.
It's very good. It organised all my boosters, all my COVID jabs.
Yeah, way before loads of other people.
Yeah.
Certainly in the country.
And I have an excellent chemist who gave me my flu jab the moment he got some. He said, come back and I'll give you a flu jab.
Yeah. You're very lucky.
I am. I appreciate that. I am. I'm getting my B12. This coming Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you're B12 deficient.
Yes, well, I missed one because I was away, so I'm going to get my B12. Enough medical information.
excellent, very good. Well, we should probably do the podcast.
I think we should.
Have
you missed doing the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've missed it.
I have.
I missed things being more normal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's pretty much back to normal now. I mean, I'm only away three Sundays, and then I'm in 3 weeks in the West End. So I'm going to be here.
Yeah. No, the West End weeks are fine.
We'll just do the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. No, it will be fine. You'll be doing shows on... Were you doing matinees on Saturdays?
Yep. We can still do the podcast, though.
We can do it on Sunday if you prefer.
Oh, whatever you prefer.
I don't mind.
Never mind at all. But yes, we got Thursdays and Saturdays for matinees, but we're not playing Mondays.
Okay. That makes sense.
7 performances a week.
It's a lot.
It won't seem like it by the time we get into it.
Mm, true.
You just bang into it.
True. Okay, well, what are we doing this week?
Well, I'm doing this week, I thought we'd do what... It's known to the police as the Mansfield murders, but they're also now been dramatised for Sky Atlantic. as called The Landscapers.
It's on BBC, isn't it?
No, darling. Don't think so. It's in Sky Atlantic. Do check.
I've got a client in it. It's not very good, is it?
Have you? Who's? What's he playing?
His name is Manuv Tiara. He is a policeman.
A policeman? Oh, that's all right. Molly is just quietly checking that I'm not mad.
I mean, you're more likely to know than me. Oh, yeah, you're right. Of course you are.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very sweet of you. Well, it's called The Landscapers, and it's on Sky Atlantic. It's about a murder, or in fact two murders, which took place on the May Day bank holiday of 1998. But it's a very contorted story. So let me just begin at the beginning.
Well, let us introduce it first. Because you're calling it the man...
We're calling it the Mansfield Murders.
But it's known as Landscapers.
Landscapers.
Okay, so this is the Mansfield Murders.
Okay. On the weekend of the May Day bank holiday in 1998, a husband and wife called Susan and Christopher Edwards killed Susan's parents, who were Patricia Wycherley, who was 63, and her husband William, who was 85. They didn't just kill them, in fact, Christopher shot them twice in a small house at the end of a cul-de-sac in a tiny village called Forest Town, not very far from Mansfield in Nottinghamshire. They then buried the bodies of Patricia and William, always known locally as Pat and Bill, in their garden.
In Pat and Bill's garden?
In Pat and Bill's garden in Blenheim Crescent. I'm sorry, Blenheim Close. And proceeded to construct the most extraordinary cover story. They pretended that Pat and Bill had gone on holiday, perhaps to Ireland. Nobody knew where. They were in search of plain air. Susan constructed the most wonderful fantasy. She also went to the local branch of Halifax in Mansfield and took out £40,000 from the joint account and opened a joint account in her and her mother's name, which she proceeded then to forge relentlessly. And over the next 15 years, they sustained the illusion that Pat and Bill were touring the world in search of a happier life.
But they wouldn't... I mean, Bill was 85, didn't you say?
Yes, he was 85. For 15...
That's impressive.
For 15 years, they went up every 3 weeks and attended the garden. They collected their pensions, their disability payments. They collected... I mean, if it wasn't so serious, it is actually quite funny. This whole elaborate device was constructed, and they pretended that Pat and Bill were still alive and just helped themselves to their money. Indeed, they sent Christmas cards in Pat and Bill's name to various people. Susan wrote letters saying, oh, sorry, they've not been in contact, but as you know, Bill isn't very well. Well, I'm not surprised. By then, he'd been in his 90s.
And he's got a bullet in him in his garden.
But we should remember that in 2013, Susan was 53 and Christopher was 57. So they were 40 and 42 when they committed the murders. This was an extraordinary act of extreme violence. But what makes it even more amazing, in a way... at this point, Susan and Christopher were living in a rented flat in Dagenham in Essex. But in 2012, they moved to Lille in France. And in October 2013, they finally... Well, they were brought to justice. Let's put it this way. Let me explain how they were brought to justice.
When are you going to explain why they did it?
Well, I'm going to explain why they did it in a minute.
Okay.
It's perfectly clear.
I mean, for money, but it's still quite intense to kill your own parents.
Okay. Susan and Christopher were married in 1983, and let us put it this way, they had a very loose grip on money. They were financial difficulties from the very beginning. At one point, Susan's stepmother left her a small legacy, which she put into her own Patton Bills house in London at that point. And she felt, Susan felt, that she was owed the money back, but the Patton Bill didn't give it back to her.
Okay.
So that's one of the... finally, they sold the house in Blenheim Close in 2005 for best part of £70,000 took the proceeds. Now...
where did they explain that Patton Bill were then?
Well, they didn't. They forged the documents. They were still travelling, according to this fantasy created by Susan and Christopher. Altogether, the fraud, that is, the money from the Halifax, the house, the pensions, and all the rest of it over 15 years, raked them in £286,285.
Impressive frauding.
But the wheels began to come off this particular bandwagon when, believe it or not, in 2012, something called the Centenarian Society asked to meet Bill face-to-face because he was getting close to his 100th birthday and they wanted to celebrate. Well, of course, meeting Bill was not going to be very easy as he was buried in the back garden of Blenheim Close. So then things got a bit dodgy. Susan and Chris moved to France, and they're still short of money. And I'll come to what they did with the money in a moment. They're still short of money. So in extremis, Christopher rings his own mother up and begins to spin a yarn about what happened to Pat and Bill. He says that he wasn't there that day, that Susan had come into the house in Blenheim Close to discover that her mother, Pat, had shot Bill Wycherley. A struggle then developed in which Susan shot her mother.
Oh, not even that then she shot herself?
No. Well, perhaps not entirely surprisingly, Christopher's mother didn't think this sounded exactly proper, and she phoned the police. The first time the police had actually been involved in this investigation. It's October 2013. A long time. 15 years of freedom.
That's nuts.
And the cash. Christopher told his mother in this fatal phone call that he'd buried the bodies of Pat and Bill in the garden of Blenheim Close. So the first thing that happens is the police dig up the garden of this small, it's a very small semi-detached house right at the end of a close. It's not a big garden, it's quite short. And it's a tiny little forest town. It's a tiny little village. The police start digging and they find bones, but they can't be sure whose bones they are. Mm. So they have to establish that one of the sets of bones is a man who's in his 80s and the other set of bones is a woman who's in her 60s, i.e. the ages of Pat and Bill in 1998 when they disappeared on their travels. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
Good-o. On October the 30th, 2013, it's entirely apparent that the police are searching for Susan and Christopher, who, as I said, had moved to Lille in France for not entirely clear reasons, probably to escape the possibility of justice. However, on October the 30th, 2013, Chris sent an email to Detective Chief Inspector Rob Griffin, who is the senior investigating officer, who was investigating the bodies dug up in Blenheim Close on October the 9th, and said that he was going to surrender to members of the UK Border Force in Lille Eurostar terminal because his wife, we'd prefer to do this since my wife is already sufficiently frightened.
I mean, fair enough.
DCI Griffin is not entirely convinced by this, and very smart piece of policing this, decides not only to alert the border force at Lille Eurostar terminal, but also to send officers to St Pancras, where the Eurostar terminates. Because guess what? On the anointed day, Susan and Christopher don't get off at Lille, don't go to the Lille terminal.
They just keep going.
They keep going to St Pancras.
Bless them.
Where they are arrested for the murders of Pat and Bill.
Didn't she, and I'm only catching snippets from trailers and scripts and stuff,
yep.
Didn't she have like a sort of slightly fantastical view of the world and a penchant for spending money on stuff that was
let's put Sue and Christopher into a little bit of background. She was a librarian, basically, with a elaborate fantasy world. And he was an accounts clerk. They were, if you look at pictures of them, they are not all that beautiful couple. They're certainly not Olivia Colman and David Thewlis. They are certainly not, who were playing them in the drama. Essentially, even when they were arrested, even after having plundered £280,000 from Pat and Bill, they've still got £160,000 worth of debts when they're arrested. What have they spent the money on? It almost defies belief. They spent it on Hollywood memorabilia. Pictures of Gary Cooper, which are authenticated as real. I mean, complete and absolute nonsense. They had constructed for themselves the weirdest possible fantasy world.
Also, you've got to go into a deep spiral if you're 15 years deep into that kind of guilt and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they were, it's fair to say. Well, let's look back at that. I'm not going to get to the trial quite yet. Let's look back at that bank holiday weekend. Susan's story was she went on her own, as I said, and found her mother had shot Bill, and she then struggled with the mother and shot the mother. The reality is that almost certainly Christopher shot Pat and Bill with a 38 Colt. He was also a member of a gun club. You know, it was one of his hobbies.
Christopher.
She wasn't. She was not a member of anything like that. There's little doubt in my mind that they had premeditated the killings very carefully. That's why they chose the May Day weekend, because it was a long weekend. The couple could easily have disappeared for a bit of a holiday. Nobody would ask too many questions. It's also pretty clear to me that Christopher had worked out that he needed a deep hole to bury both bodies, because one or two neighbours reported seeing him in the garden digging in the middle of the night. Now, nobody really put two and two together, but apparently he started to dig one hole but hit some cables, so he dug another hole, a bigger one further away. Mm-hmm. Not that much further, because if you look at, again, I urge you to look at the pictures of the house. It's
very
really
small.
Very small. We're not talking about... So they bury them, and then they construct this fantasy about Pat and Bill going on a wonderful trip, and they're all looking for clean air in Ireland and all sorts, and send Christmas cards on their behalf and answer letters saying, oh, well, I'm sorry. I mean, they claim the Department of Work and Pensions are equally bamboozled by Susan and Christopher. And it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. So they finally come to trial in Nottingham Crown Court in March 2014. They admitted that they had buried Pat and Bill in the garden, but said, the original story, Pat had killed Bill and then Susan had killed Pat.
Mm-hmm.
They also admitted taking £40,000 from Pat and Bill's Halifax bank account immediately after the killing, bank holiday 1998. But they denied murder.
That's the problem, though, isn't it? I mean, you've not got a leg to stand on because you've got no justification. It's like if your parents have died and when you tell the police straight away, you don't just go and take money from their bank and then run away. Mm. Like, it just looks dodgy.
How do you think you're going to get away with it? But get away with it, they did. Susan, at trial, and I somehow doubt this is going to come up in the dramatisation, but we should be interested to see. She admitted the manslaughter of her mother, Pat, but said she'd been abused by Bill when she was younger. And if you like to add a little insult to your injury, and that Pat had told her that she'd had sex with Christopher.
It's all got a bit out of hand.
Absolutely. It was completely out of control by this point. Susan also claimed that her mother told her that she was unwanted.
We don't have any record of whether Susan did have a difficult childhood.
No, there are no record of it, none at all.
Sounds like she was delusional, though.
Yes. Well, if you keep on collecting ancient photographs of Frank Sinatra, for which you pay thousands, I think you've got to be fairly delusional, haven't you, to be honest? I mean, it's interesting that when they were arrested, Christopher had just £17 in his bank account, whereas she had 11,000. And they had all this memorabilia which they could
sell.
But then
they've got a debt, though.
Yeah, but that she wasn't telling anyone she had 11,000. Not surprisingly, the jury did not take very long in convicting Susan and Christopher Edwards of the crimes of killing Pat and Bill Wycherley. Which planet those two were living on is almost beyond me. But I suppose you have to say that to get away with it for as long as they got away with it was an extraordinary achievement.
Pretty impressive.
Really?
That's bonkers.
But what I worry about, and one, I wanted to raise an issue with you, darling, about this. What I worry about, I'd like to go back to the pictures of Susan and Chris. What I worry about is that a four-parter on Sky Atlantic is going to end up glamorising Susan and Christopher. This was a horrid, horrid, premeditated crime, murder of two people, entirely innocent people, for money, for greed. Susan was clearly the Lady Macbeth here. She was really telling Christopher what to do. Christopher was carrying out instructions, in my mind. And he was a willing tool in this. He didn't object. He didn't say, no, I'm not doing it. Quite the contrary. Not only did he, almost certainly he shot them, but that he dug the holes and put the bodies in.
Mm.
You know?
Well, I don't think we can pass judgment on it till we see it.
No, we can't. But what worries me about it, and this is something that we've talked about before, and I'd like to use the opportunity to talk about it again. I'm always worried that we glamorise perpetrators and we don't think enough about the victims.
Yeah. Yes.
I think...
That's true, although I think we do try not to do that. And I think if you look at some dramatisations, they do focus on the victims. I think the dramatisation about the Ipswich sex worker murders focused on the victims.
Yeah.
I think the drama Three Girls that were about the Rochdale paedophile rings focus on the victims.
Yeah, I think they. I quite agree with you. They do.
But I do understand what you mean, and I do think. Well, I mean, it's happening more and more. So I know I didn't watch Manhunt. I don't know. You know, I don't know if we do always get it right. But there's more and more dramatizations of true crime than there ever have been.
Absolutely. But to
I
put
didn't
it,
watch
but
White House Farm Murders either.
To
so
put
I can't tell you.
To put an Oscar winner in the role, who is, you know, undeniably striking, in a role that's written for her by her husband. The whole series is written by Olivia Colman's husband.
Yeah.
Something doesn't sit quite right with me.
Really?
Mm, really. But you're going to tell me, well, what about Macbeth?
I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say, you know, increasingly we are looking at telling the stories of true crime and they are being dramatized, or we see that happening. And increasingly actors, female actors, are looking for opportunities to play groundbreaking roles, of which there still aren't enough. Mm-hmm. So if her and her husband decide to find a story that gives her the opportunity to play a character which she can embody, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I accept that. I accept that.
And also, I think you're also, I appreciate that potentially it's glamorizing them, but then by saying that, you're automatically undervaluing the audience. Because you're saying that they can't distinguish between the two.
But I'm saying that it makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm not
but
saying...
But what about Charlize Theron playing Aileen Wuornos?
Absolutely. My argument falls.
No, it doesn't. It's just that the same argument happened then. It's like, well, why would you choose someone so beautiful to play someone, you know, to make herself look ugly to inhabit a part? But it's like, I think we have to give people the opportunity to play the roles because they're good at acting. Until we've seen it, we can't possibly
judge it. Well, no,
again,
but I was simply raising an issue with you that I've raised before. I mean, some of the details they went described about in Susan's version of the killings, you know, she says, oh, I struggled with my mother and the gun went off. Well, guess what? She said that they waste a whole week. She put the bodies under the bed and waited a whole week before taking Christopher back up to dig the hole in the grave in the garden. And when they'd put the bodies in the grave in the garden, before they put their bodies in the grave in the garden, they watched the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah, but these people are mentally unstable.
They didn't look like it. They looked like a perfectly ordinary couple.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? That's
yes.
The whole point of what you say to me every week. It's like they don't have horns and a tail.
Well, but here, you know, they live in Dagenham.
It just doesn't surprise me that if you've got that far down a path of something, everything has to become normalized. So I don't think that's like, it's like, you know, the guy that went and bought, you know, crisps after murdering that woman, and like the one, you know, the one that like calmly went to B&Q to buy a hacksaw or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like at that stage, it's too late.
Yeah.
You're one thing or the other. You're either the person who's phoned the police straight away and given yourself up, or you're the other version.
Yeah.
And if you're the other version, once you start going, you just got to keep going.
Got to keep going. Yeah. Well, they, as I said, the jury were not convinced by this argument, and they were both sentenced to life with a minimum of 25 years.
Are they both still in prison?
They are. And I think highly likely to remain there for the rest of their natural lives. You could say, in one sense, I suppose you could say it was a sort of bizarre neorealism. Or, you know, it's almost defies belief that you should go to such lengths.
Yeah.
Over so long.
I do really believe in that thing of like, once you've got on a path of something, it becomes harder and harder to get out
to get off it. Well, like addictions of any kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But an addiction which really seems to rotate around pictures of old Hollywood stars.
Well, I mean, I've never really understood like shopping addiction either, but it is a real thing.
Yeah. Well, my only hope, and I we haven't seen it yet because it doesn't start until the 7th of December.
How will you watch it anyway?
I'm not sure yet, but I'll find a way. Is that it tells the story, at least in part, from Pat and Bill's point of view.
I think that's extremely unlikely. I don't think there's enough... You don't have enough... I don't think there's enough strands.
Mm. Well, I've great respect for Olivia Colman as an actress. I've no doubt she's thought it through, and I've no doubt she and her husband have thought about the story in great depth. And I've every...
I think from what I know of it, I think it's more an explanation into the characters of why two people might do that. And perhaps there is something to be said for exactly what you're saying, which is what leads a person who is, quote, normal to do something like that, and what happens when they're so far along a journey, and like how they have to mentally tell themselves what they're justifying it to themselves constantly. And
well, these were not two youngsters when they killed Pat and Bill. They were in their early 40s.
I don't think that makes any difference personally.
But they've been married for 16 years.
But I also don't think that, I mean, I don't...
Well, so 15 years.
I know people who are older than me who have less grasp on certain realities than I do. I don't think age is a marker of...
No, it's just particularly for me, particularly cold-blooded. This is not a crime of passion.
No, it's not. It's just they're completely detached, aren't they?
Mm.
Maybe it's that thing that you're finding hard to just like how can you
maybe
have
it
no...
is. Maybe it is. But I do think it's a fascinating case, and it's a fascinating story.
Mm.
Because to quote, get away with it for that long, and only really to come to the surface in... Or partly, almost by accident, by somebody wanting to congratulate Bill on his 100th birthday,
mm.
is adds another layer of bizarre, doesn't
yeah.
it? And in the end, of course, what they're undoing wasn't just that. It was also the fact that they just couldn't control their spending and hadn't been able to control it since they got married in 1983.
No, I don't think they probably wouldn't have killed anyone if they could control it.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not.
Maybe that's the whole point.
Anyway, that was the Mansfield Murders.
Thank you. We'll be interested to hear what people think after they've watched the teleprogramme.
Exactly. I should be fascinated.
Jeffrey will be giving us what for when she wins a BAFTA for it in May.
No, I don't. No. It just worries me. It doesn't quite sit right with me. But I'm perfectly prepared. Eileen Wuornos is a very good example. Perfectly prepared to say that we must portray all kinds of characters. And that's what should happen.
I also do really think that as an agent, I can tell you that whatever anyone might say, there are not... You have to create the roles for women of Olivia's age that are interesting.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah.
exist.
No.
People don't naturally want to tell them.
No.
So if you have to go out there and find a story that you can adapt, you know, there's something in that.
There's something in that. But the difference between this one and the story of the canoe man who hid in his house.
Which is also coming out, finished filming this year.
Yes, coming out,
next
before
year.
Long, isn't it? There's no death involved in
Stephen Graham.
In that.
No death in the canoe man.
No.
No. Fine. Well, the Grindr killer's murder's coming out. There's death in that.
Yes, the inquest is still rolling on, isn't it? And Stephen Port's inquest, the inquest into victims.
So, there's plenty of death in that.
There are four, yes. All propped up in a churchyard. Three of them propped up in the local churchyard, weren't they?
Yeah.
It's a very grim case. It's the other Grindr killer, isn't it?
Yeah. We didn't call the... Let's not get into that.
Okay.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh, well, there you are. That is the Mansfield Murders.
Very good. Where is your tour taking you tomorrow?
Birmingham. Birmingham rep.
Birmingham?
Birmingham. We're going on the train in the morning.
In the middle of the Earthingham?
Yep. And then we go to Malvern following Sunday, and then we go to Stockton-on-Tees, the Sunday before Christmas.
Mm.
to a great big one. It's we've done a few big ones. A
few barns.
The Princess in Torquay, one show. It's gigantic. And I think we got 450 in or something. It's 1,500 comfortably.
Well, did Chichester, didn't you?
Yeah, we did Chichester.
That's ginormous.
It was, yes. But we got a lot of people in it, to be fair. Stockton, 1,600.
Chichester's the right kind of crowd for you two.
Yeah, I think it probably was. Yes, although they were very enthusiastic in Bath and very enthusiastic in Derby.
Yeah, you said Derby was a right goer.
They were, absolutely. Well, they were on their seats, out of their seats. They were all standing up, applauding.
You've had a few standing O's, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, touch wood, thank goodness. It's very impressive.
You're the impressive one.
So, I'm looking forward to it. I rather missed it this week, as I haven't been performing this week. I've rather missed it. It's a mixture of trepidation and elation.
Well done you.
Yeah. I said to somebody the other day, I'm only the amateur at this show. And he said, after you've done this tour, you will not be an amateur.
That's true. Funny thing to add to your bow in your 70s.
Yeah, it is. Very old, isn't it? Is David and I have done a film together, a book together, and now a theatre tour together.
Oh. Anything left? Release the perfume?
No.
Perhaps you two should have a podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, darling, thank you. And we ought to thank all the people who...
Thank you to all the people that help us, to our producer Sam Brain, to my brother Dan who did the music, my friend George who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to you the listeners, thank you so much.
And thank you to you, Molly, whose idea this was. I don't think anyone could predict what happened to poor Pat and Bill Wycherley, but it is fair to say that bad things happen to good people, so do be careful out there.